I'd like to do part two in the in the series of sermons having to do generally with the encounter of the human spirit with God. We talked last Sunday about the way in which crisis in human life, at whatever level, whether it be the straight physiological experience or levels of struggle in other dimensions, that the crisis is created by the fact that there is an ever-present tendency to resist all movement that pulls the individual out of the context of the familiar. And also there is always present the impulse to spill over into the new. And the tension between these two creates crisis. And in the crisis, the individual is confronted with whatever there is that is literal in himself and in his experience and in the universe. That God is a part of the individual who is experiencing the crisis. He's a part of all of the materials that enter into the crisis. And that this whole concept is built upon a profound religious belief about life and about its structure. And that belief is that life is orderly, that there is an order that bottoms all of the stuff of existence. And that when a man is involved in a tragic sequence of experiences which may be puzzling, which may be terrifying, which may be destructive in their operation upon him, if he wrestles with them at all, the thing that instincts his wrestling is the affirmation that there is in the problem of his struggle a rationality, an order, something that will yield its secret to the questing spirit. And if he renounces his experience and turns his back upon it, it is his way of saying that the experience itself fundamentally and thoroughly is irrational and cannot be understood. There is no clue, no secret, and it belongs outside of the context of living. It's very interesting to me. Now, of course, that presupposes all of this discussion last Sunday, presupposes that only in crisis, only the individuals who are caught in some great upheaval have the divine encounter. I did not mean to convey that altogether, but when I think about it, it seems that I don't quite know how to put this. It, it, it seems that there are personalities that attract crisis. I remember reading Jean Christophe years ago, and one of the things that impressed me very much in the story was the fact that Roland said that Jean Christophe was like a mountain peak. He has a very beautiful passage, about five pages, describing these mountain ranges and the lightning playing over these ranges. But he says that there are certain peaks that always attract the lightning. That the lightning goes all around these others. And he has an explanation for it. I suppose it's satisfying to a geologist, but I'll just take it for what it says. That there are elements in the peaks, certain minerals that have an affinity for the lightning. The lightning, I mean, they just call the lightning. I remember when I was a boy going to a funeral of a very famous minister, and an equally famous minister preached the funeral. And it was one of the first times that I'd ever heard a man say publicly what you were sure that if you were talking to him privately, he would say. It was a great lesson to me. He talked about this man who, in whose presence we were, and he said, he killed himself. That shocked everybody. He said, there are some people who go down to the Jordan River where the ferry boat and if they see that the ferry boat is not there, then they go back up into the community to carry on their work. But this man, when he came down to the landing, the ferry boat had pulled out and was on its way across the river. But he made so much confusion at the dock that the boat turned around and came back to get it. Very interesting. Now, I think that there are people whose constitutions seem to create vacuums that pull into them all kinds of churning, critical, crucial situations. They move from crisis to crisis. And anytime you see that person appear, you know that a storm is somewhere around. Now, it is not because that person is better or worse. But what I'm feeling for is that over and above what is inherent relative to the divine encounter in situations of crisis, there seems to be an element in personality that is attracted to crises. Now, the assumption with reference to encountering God in crisis is that that God is the antagonist of the human spirit. The wrestling with God, as if God in some sense is trying to overcome man, trying to tame the glory out of man, to reduce man to some kind of non-entity that ought to test man in order that his true character might be revealed, might come up to the surface. And then God may have in his hands a human instrument with a divine quality that can be used to work his perfect work in the world. Now, for many of us, that is true. But there's another aspect to this to which I would call your attention, and that is that so often as we live, we find it comparatively simple and easy to have a sense of great spiritual movement and process in the crises of our lives. The time of greatest agony for the human spirit is not such times, but it is when it seems as if life has passed us by, that life has not honored us with the intensity of great and dramatic agony. Life has not saluted our personalities by exposing us to terrifying lacerations, but rather that life has just swung by and left us alone on our little island. Our tragedy is not that so many things happen to us that we can't manage, that we are overwhelmed by the terrific pressures under which we live. That is not our tragedy, because there is something in the human spirit that reaches down to the deepest thing that there is in it, and that deepest thing reaches out, leaps out to the deepest thing that there is in the circumstance or in life. And these two elements come together as one. But the tragedy is when nothing ever happens to you. Nothing. Nothing. That life seems to say, you don't count. You don't rate being hit across the head. That's it. How can I have the encounter when my assignment is to the deadly monotony of the commonplace? Always the same dull round. Always the same dead faces. always the same, relentless. Now, there's a rather extraordinary insight that emerges. Many years ago, in Asia Minor, during a period of excavation, a town was uncovered. I can't think of the long Greek name for it, but the English quick translation is Pike Town, P-I-K-E town, because it was the center of the worship, of Pike worship at that period. Among the many things that they found, old bills of lading and old receipts, marriage licenses, all sorts of things. Among the things they found were some quite good condition papyri, which were sayings of Jesus that were not familiar to us in our Gospels. Some quotations from Gospels that we didn't know anything about, and then a whole section of what was called sayings of Jesus. Now, one of these sayings was this, that wheresoever thou art, thou art not far from God. God is with thee. Cleave the wood, and there you will see him. Raise the stone, and behold his face. Now, please listen. If it be true, as it seems to me to be true, that all of life, is bottomed by an orderly and creative, rational spirit, mind, which, you see, and I repeat this because if we ever get it hammered, it'll be a wonderful thing for us. Which, you see, is the basic principle upon which all of our investigation of nature is built. The scientist always says, with reference to that which he has not explored, that he doesn't know yet. He says it is unknown, but he does not say it is unknowable. It is unknown. Because the whole experience of life, the whole world of nature, the whole universe is bottomed by this principle of rationality, this order of creativity, which the mind has in it also. And when that creative principle in the mind begins waking on the stubborn and unyielding and chaotic stuff and unknown stuff of experience, little by little, the principle of rationality in the mind strikes fire here, and the response of rationality in the stuff creates what men call understanding of this. Now, if that's true with nature, then it seems to me, therefore, nowhere I am, no thing I may be doing, is not in immediate candidacy for the fullest and most amazing revelation of God. Now that is the meaning of this thing I was talking about a moment ago in terms of religious experience. So there is no ordinary experience for me. There is no commonplace, insignificant moment. But every moment, wherever I am, stands in immediate candidacy for the completest and most exhaustive manifestation of the mind, of the will, of the purpose, of the Spirit of God. And therefore, I should not dishonor the immediate potentiality, if I may put it that way, of the living God in the dry rot of my situation, merely because I was not chosen to walk the high road, merely because I have no great gifts of mind or no particular advantages in status, no dramatic resources available to me, I'm just me, just ordinary. But where I am, there, the infinite is in reach. You see what this does? It cuts the nerve center of the thinking that makes a separation between the secular and the sacred. You see? It has its most dramatic expression in the democratic dogma that we talk about, that the infinite value of the individual in the presence of God, all of it saying the same thing, you see? That right here, in my little room, with my little life, with my little dreams, with my little sins and my little sorrows, the great high God is at home.
Lifetime sentence in the prison in Charlestown, Massachusetts, can say, life, you've beaten me, yet with stinging wounds I kiss your hand. Though you've tortured me till my joy was killed, my hopes, my dreams for things I do not understand. Though you have silenced every fife and drum that makes my march less terrible, I love you, life. And life, for all your cruel powers, for all your proud brutalities, how wonderful the few brief times when you're kind to me. Always, I am on the threshold of the ultimate revelation. The ultimate revelation. Therefore, I shall lift up my head. I shall stop being ashamed of my lot. I shall relax the envy with which I look upon the fortune of my fellows.
I shall expect the highest revelation in my littlest place. It's wonderful, isn't it? The commonplace now becomes shot through with new glory. And God is encountered even in the drabness of my life, because he is in me and he's in my situation. And when I realize that, then these two elements get together. And when they do, a current is established that can float anything. And if I don't believe that, for me, life has to consist, one by one, of closing of doors.